Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Did you see the Antonio Brown tweet from today, by the way, or the statement?
Yeah, I did. That was amazing.
You know,
absolutely amazing.
I mean, you're in the South, Rob. It's you know, Jesus and football and
sure,
Red Rocks.
Red Rocks. I'm not sure what that was about.
Mina Kimes thought it was like a Wilco reference to their song "Jesus, Etc."
Okay,
I guess not.
That would require him knowing what that is.
I'm fairly certain Antonio Brown has not listened to any Wilco, but I could be wrong.
I mean, I don't know what Antonio Brown does. He does some weird stuff, man. I mean, he even had a weird word mark on that thing, which was hilarious. I enjoyed that.
The sports memery.
Yeah, sports memery. That's right.
All right, man.
What a guy. What a CTE-filled man.
It's like me saying my biggest regret is that I never get to see myself podcast.
I don't want to see that of myself.
I don't like hearing the sound of my own voice, honestly.
I don't either.
Like, every time I play these back, I think, God, I sound so nasally.
I can't listen to it. But I also don't want to see myself because I'm, like, squatting on my couch, like, just in a tank top talking to my computer. Like, I look like a freak.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. But, you know, good for Antonio Brown for getting that out there.
I guess. He's not signed, is he? I don't think he is. He got released.
Yeah.
I doubt anyone's stupid enough to pick him up.
Have you met the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Maybe. They would seem like a good option.
They just kind of popped into my head. But all the Jesus at Red Rocks memes are just killing me.
Jesus and Red Rocks.
Absolutely killing me. There was one with like a hip-hop album cover with the parental advisory sticker in the bottom right corner.
Good. Excellent. Excellent work.
Awesome content.
Excellent work. He never fails to deliver.
No. No, I mean, I'm terminally online and poisoned by this app, but it does deliver. It does entertain me.
There's some good stuff. There's some good stuff. And then there's some really bad stuff that we'll just ignore. We'll
yes.
Leave that to one side.
That's why we have mute and block features.
It comes in handy.
All right, man.
Or if you're on private, you can just unfollow people, which is what I do.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, because you have that private account.
Yeah, man.
All right. Well, since we're here, Rob, let's talk a little Atletico.
Let's do it.
Preseason's done, man. The season itself begins. Well, La Liga actually starts on Friday. Atletico don't play till Monday when they travel the short trek to the Coliseum Alfonso Pérez to take on Getafe to open the 2022-23 season. Atleti completed an unbeaten, perfect preseason, Rob. 4 wins from 4, 13 goals scored, 1 against. How much preseason did you watch?
Absolutely none. I watched no preseason game of any club whatsoever. I think the closest, like, I saw all the goals afterwards. Like, I watched the highlights, but the closest I got to following it was I have the notifications on my phone when they score, and I was like,
hell yeah,
Morata's doing what right now?
That's right.
That was my main reaction.
You know, Madrid have Benzema, Barcelona have Lewandowski if they can register him. Okay, that's impressive. But at Atletico, Rob, we have Alvaro Morata.
Alvaro Morata, the guy we've always wanted.
That's right. Always been big fans of his on the program.
We'd welcome him back with open arms.
That's right. I have never had an unkind word or thought about Alvaro Morata's style of play.
He will score some goals.
Some amount of goals.
Likely less than 15.
So he is set to stay, Rob. That's probably a perfect place to start the pod as we talk about some preseason thoughts and observations in so much as we have them. Morata led all Atleti players in goals this preseason with four of them, including the hat trick to close things out against his old team, Juve. That's quite the hat trick, though, Rob, against the team that's been trying to sign him the entire summer. He goes and drops a hat trick on him in a rescheduled friendly at their training facility.
Yeah, that was a weird one. I don't know if that was him being like, please come and sign me, or, I don't know, taking out some kind of frustration. Who knows? But, yeah, I mean, that was pretty perfect.
His second goal was just this incredible solo run.
Yeah.
And he cuts outside of the defender to slot it in for his second goal of the half. And that was moments after João Félix missed a penalty.
Well, you know,
incredible.
The thing with Morata is he's been signed by a lot of really good teams because in moments he can look really good.
Mm-hmm.
But then every single team that he's ever signed for, he doesn't stay there for a particularly long time because then they realize he's, like, highly inconsistent.
Mm-hmm. And volatile.
So it's kind of the Morata experience to, like, have one really good game and now he's not going to score until November.
And you and I know better at this point than to get overly excited about preseason exploits, especially Morata's, when we know the kind of player he is. I actually think he could be helpful for Atleti this year. It looks like we're going to carry five forwards again, which, God help me, the easy solution is to swap one out for a center back, but I guess that's too obvious. We're going to carry five forwards again, but I think Morata, I don't know where he is in the pecking order right now. He started the preseason arguably fifth, but now he may have worked himself into a position where he starts the opening game against Getafe. He's good in the air. He's a good support forward, really good in hold-up play, a willing option in hold-up play. He just doesn't finish consistently, and he strays offside a lot.
I think if you're going to make the case for him this year is that he would be a good foil to João Félix.
Mm-hmm.
And if his whole role is predicated on making João Félix better, then that is a good situation. Because God help us if we have to talk about having a redundant option again with João Félix, like Antoine Griezmann. Or like Angel Correa.
Yeah.
You know, he at least offers something different, which I think is worthwhile and potentially helpful, because I don't know that you think this, but I feel fairly confident that you do, that this is the João Félix goes nuclear season.
I do
so
think
if,
this.
If Morata
yes.
is the guy to facilitate that, then I could see that.
Mm-hmm. I do want to talk about that momentarily, because I 100% believe this will be João Félix's year, where he becomes one of the best players in Europe.
Same.
And there aren't that many great roles for Morata, because he's a really weird player. He's not the kind of nine that a bunch of clubs thought he was or is. But this is one scenario I think he can be useful, because he's a pretty good support forward. He had a bunch of assists at Juve last year, and from what I saw, had good chemistry with Dusan Vlahovic.
Yeah, which also is kind of a weird fit. But I think for a guy like João Félix, I think those two, if they can form a good combination, I think they're two very different skill sets. Could work pretty well together.
João's assist for him, the first goal of the game, he took out four defenders with that through ball. Oh, my God. I know it's preseason, but that got me excited.
I mean, if he can put it on a platter for Morata, you know, eventually he will not miss all of those chances. If he's getting amazing, if you're counting on Morata to be the number one striker and also do some creation, you're going to be in trouble. But if you have Joe Felix there, he might get a few. But no, I think I can talk myself into the combination working, even though I know that Morata's never going to be a superstar. That's just not who he is.
Yeah, and he's not the kind of killer nine that Madrid thought he would turn out to be, that Chelsea thought he would be, that perhaps Juventus thought he would be.
Right.
But he can still be a perfectly acceptable and useful player, and especially in a World Cup year where motivation has always kind of been his weak point.
True.
He's struggled for inspiration, and mentally he hasn't always – it's not his strength. You know, the mental aspect of the game hasn't always been the sharpest for him, but – in a World Cup year where he's staying at Atletico and he still has to maybe convince Luis Enrique that he should be the starting nine at the World Cup this November, then that just improves the internal competition. It'll improve Morata personally, individually, and the competition for places, again, looks to be pretty fierce. And I wonder how Cholo is going to juggle it all.
Well, and you have to think, like, this could realistically be his last chance at a World Cup, because by the time the next one rolls around, he'll be 34.
He'll be 33 or 34.
He'll be 33. But, kind of on the precipice.
I kind of thought he would push harder for a move because of that.
Right.
But the reporting in Spain has said that he really wants to stay. His attitude's been good. He and his wife and kids are tired of moving around.
Well, and to be fair, he's always liked being at Atleti. That was never really the issue. Mm-hmm. He's never really had a problem with that. I mean, he wanted to come to the club, and I think he enjoyed, you know, moments of his time there. But I don't know. It's just a weird situation. But yeah, I mean, if there's ever a time for it to happen, this is it.
Let's talk about João Felix a little bit more, Rob. Tell me why you think this is going to be the year he goes nuclear.
Well, I mean, I think the thing that I'm certainly guilty of, and I think a lot of other people are guilty of, is taking for granted just how young João Felix was and is when he joined Atleti. And it was a tough situation for him when he came, because he struggled with injuries, and it was a really different system that he was getting into. But you look at the last 2 years, and there's just been steady improvement. I think his finishing's gotten better. He stayed largely healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's kind of figured out what his spot is in this team now. And I think also he's earned Cholo's trust to be the guy in the team. So I think, you know, he's only 22 years old. He'll turn 23 during the year. I think this is the year. Like, he's still so young. It's amazing. But the last two seasons have been really good, and yet we're still disappointed because we know how damn good he is.
We know just how good he can be, how much of a tease he is. Like, I'm very João Felix pilled for about 7 or 8 months now. And I am very, very convinced this is going to be his year. It can't not be. This might be maybe not João's last chance, but this is his fourth year here, out of a 7-year contract, and we've seen it in glimpses. I mean, his first year, he moved too soon. Atleti bought him from Benfica probably a year before they should have, but if they wait that extra year, they don't get him.
No, probably not.
They wait that extra year, and Benfica sell him to Madrid, they sell him to Man City, they sell him wherever else. So Atletico had to swoop when they did to get someone this talented. And his talent has always been obvious, but you watch him and how he moved in the second half of last season before he suffered the muscle injury to his hamstring, and you watch how he moved in this preseason, and he's so good. Just how quick he is, how agile he is, how intelligent he is, how graceful he is on the ball, his vision, his finishing ability, the way he strikes a ball so cleanly and so powerfully. The eye test and the underlying metrics, like his shot-creating actions, the amount of times he's fouled per 90 also kind of puts this into perspective. He gets fouled so much because opposing teams just zero in on him and target him, and he gets no protection from refs. So I think this is the year he's going to get that respect, now that he kind of took it by the scruff of the neck last February and said, right, this is my starting place in the 11. He had a period where he scored 7 times in 10 games and almost single-handedly, probably along with Reinildo, dragged us back into the Champions League places to stay. So
and he was doing that in a dysfunctional ass team.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is that I think slash hope we're gonna be more functional this year. I think the idea as to how we're gonna play, what formation we're gonna use, I think that's a bit clearer. Simeone seems really wedded to the 3-5-2, which I think is great news. He views that is the way forward, playing with three center backs. The club needs to back him better and get him another center back to probably make it work, given our injuries back there. But he views this as the way forward, the best way to get the most out of the attacking talent that is in this squad. And Cholo, at his core, Rob, has always been a pragmatist. Like, people say Atletico play defensive, they play harem ball, they play this terrible defensive anti-football style. When, no, Cholo was responding to the options in his squad, whether the club backed him properly or not. Now we can play, ideally, with a bit more freedom in a 3-5-2 or even a 3-4-3, given we still have five forwards in the squad. And I think that's just the perfect opportunity for Zhao to shine. And it's the perfect chance for him to just explode and put this team on his back, and maybe lead Atletico to some silverware this year.
Well, I mean, Simeone is never going to go hell for leather and play all-out attacking football. That's just not a thing. Now, whether it will be more watchable, I guess, remains to be seen, because it really was tough last year. But I think the other thing, it's kind of old school, I think, the role that Joao Felix is probably going to have, because, or he should have, is just give him the car keys, man.
Yep.
Like, just be the old school number 10 that you don't really see that much anymore, but just, and not even a traditional number 10, but just be the guy initiating everything in the attack, and good things will happen. There's good players around in that forward line. I think they need to settle on who those guys are going to be and not just keep chucking in. It's like, all right, this week we're going to try Cunha. This week we're going to try Antoine Griezmann.
Mm-hmm.
This week we're going to try Morata, because I don't think that helps anybody. But I think finding a settled group of players would be very beneficial to Joao Felix. But as we can see, even if it's not, he can still make things happen.
And yeah, he's individually so good that he alone can break the system. And that's something you and I talked about when Atleti first signed him 3 years ago,
uh-huh.
Is that he might be so skilled individually that he can just do anything he wants, and he can just freelance and improvise, and it works out. So
yeah.
I think we're going to see that this season. And your point about getting things settled and balanced more or less is also a good one. I think someone could look at this squad and say, wow, Atletico only made three signings this summer, and one of them has been loaned out to Valencia, Samuel Lino. The other two are here. One of them is a 33-year-old pivot coming off an Achilles injury a year and a half ago, and the other is an exciting young wingback who's Argentina's starter at that position, but is unproven at the top level.
Yeah.
So I think the glass half full is, okay, Atletico didn't, at least as far as we know, there's still a few weeks left in the window, and there have been the Renan Lodi rumors today. Atletico haven't lost anybody important. They've kept the squad practically as is, which ordinarily would be good, but the glass half empty perspective is, well, they kept the squad together when it was bad last year, right? They didn't lose any major players. They didn't make any splashy, bold, audacious signings. They just kept things as it was, as they were. And this is a team that for most of last year played horribly and didn't get into a Champions League place until March. So are you glass half empty or glass half full? Was it the right decision for Atletico to not upset the chess pieces too much?
I mean, I would lean empty, but on the basis that I think there wasn't much room to work with. Like, obviously, I wish that we were in a scenario that the squad could be backed more than it was. But I think with a lot of these guys, there was just no room to move them. Like, Atleti sold nobody for any amount of money this summer, you know, barring the Lodi thing, which could happen, I guess. But
there
just wasn't much room to bring in any profit, which in turn meant there wasn't really any room to bolster the squad, because a lot of these guys played crap last year and nobody really wants them. So, like, and either that or they're old, which, again, same deal. And it just is what it is. I mean, I think they did very well to get Lemar to take less money, which was crazy.
Yeah.
But you know, I like it. I think it, I don't know. I don't know what I think, to be honest with you. Like, the squad, I still look at it, I'm like, this is a jumbled mess. But then you start looking at the names, like, oh, I kind of like him. Oh, you know, he could come back, bounce back. I like the talent, that sort of thing. So it is such a teeter-totter thing with the squad. I think if you look into it for a long enough amount of time, you can convince yourself either way.
Yeah, that's,
I think at this point, we just have to see it.
That's kind of where I land. Do you think it's really as simple as if Jan Oblak bounces back, Atleti are instantly going to be contending for trophies again?
It'll help.
Because he was really bad last year.
He was bad.
He literally, in some metrics, Rob, was the worst goalkeeper in La Liga, which is staggering for a player of his track record and his talent.
I mean, but then at the same time, you can make a bunch of excuses for him that, like, it's not like the team in front of him was doing him any favors.
No, the defense was unsettled all year. Hermoso and Felipe had terrible seasons. Jimenez and Savage both spent a good chunk of the season on the shelf with injuries or suspensions. And Atletico did not do anything to really reinforce that over the summer. Like, their solution was Reynildo, who was signed as a left back. Cholo decided to make him a left-sided center back because he's so defensively good and he's so physically strong and capable, and that worked out. I wonder if it's going to work out over a full-length season.
I think it's a fair question.
Yeah.
Because he was a surprise that he was that good.
Like, we love Reynildo. He's awesome.
Yeah. But
I love that guy, but
I would love for him to be that good.
Yet I don't
know that he is.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a sustainable strategy. I don't believe it is a sustainable strategy to run it back with Hermoso and Felipe. But to your earlier point, you can't sell if there are no offers. Like, nobody wanted Hermoso because he was bad last year. Felipe, I don't know why they re-signed Felipe. That still is baffling to me, because he's just gotten steadily worse since he arrived.
Yeah.
You know, and they didn't. The Lodi news that dropped today, in case you all missed it, Manchester City apparently want him. This is in the Telegraph and in Diario AS. Pep Guardiola is a big fan. He wants to turn him into another one of those marauding wingbacks they have. His release clause, I thought it was 60 million, Rob. Apparently it's 120. If it were 60 million, I'd be a lot more nervous about Lodi going, but at 120, nah. Atleti can hold out for a Cucurella-like fee and hang on to him. But what do you think? Should Atleti be open to selling Lodi, even if it's this late in the window? Is there need for another defender, a left-sided defender / left-sided center back? Is there need that great?
I mean, for that amount of money, I think you have to at least think about it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's a lot of money for Lodi, who you and I both really like. But I think it's fair to say that his Atleti career has been up and down, and I've never been super convinced that Cholo was ever that in love with him. So, you know, I think if you get a large amount of money from Man City and you can use that to maybe address a couple areas of the squad, that's kind of attractive. Mm-hmm. And the window is still open for quite some time. There is time. So I think you have to consider it, depending on what Man City are willing to offer. I mean, they obviously have a big need at left back. Like, they sold Zinchenko, they failed to get Cucurella, and they're going to sign the dude from Anderlecht, who's, okay, sure, that guy's not going to start for Man City. That's not a real thing. Like, they need, like, a real left back. I would be surprised if they didn't sign one. And I think Lodi actually makes a lot of sense in a Pep Guardiola team. I think that would probably serve him quite well. But I think you got to think about it. Like, I love him, but for, you know, we're talking 60, 70 million euros, I would think about it.
Like, if City weren't going to go over 40 million for Cucurella,
sure.
why would they go to 60 or 70 for Lodi?
Is Cucurella that, is he better than Renan Lodi?
For the fee Chelsea paid for him, no. Like, Chelsea paid a ridiculous fee for him. Like, I like Marc Cucurella a lot. There was a time I wanted Atletico to sign him pretty badly, but they spent how much on him? Like, oh, they spent 60 million quid on him?
Right.
With add-ons? Oh, my God. Like, I right. like him as a player, but that's an obscene amount of money.
It's an insane amount of money. He had one very good year at Brighton, and he was good at Getafe for 1 year before that. He's the same age as Lodi. We've seen Lodi perform at a higher level.
In the Champions League, yeah.
In the Champions League for 3 years at Atletico, and be largely good, but also I think in the context of he would be asked to do less defensively in a Pep team, which I think would benefit him.
Yeah.
I think you can sort of see where the logic is there.
And if you can bring me a center back of guarantees, quote unquote, then sure, for 60 to 70 million, sure, I would part with Lodi, but I still like him a lot. I still think he's a very talented player, and I think he's also a pretty big breakout candidate. If Reinildo can consistently clean up the defensive messes he leaves behind, then I think Lodi could really stake his place in this team. But there's a lot of competition for places, Rob. And I think that's one of the positives that I'm looking at, is that not only do Atletico and Simeone seem more sure of the system and the style they want to play, but with Morata and Saul coming back, at least for Morata, Saul, we can't really say. We need to see him in live game action. That isn't the preseason. But, you know, the competition for places, we have basically, if you include Griezmann, 8 midfielders fighting for 3 places. We've got, you know, at right back, Molina, Voss, Llorente, hopefully not very often. On the left side, Carrasco, Saul, Lodi, Reinildo. And I wrote about the midfield earlier this week, in that you could play Griezmann as an interior. Lemar can play as a central midfielder in a midfield 3. You have DePaul, you have Koke, Kondogbia, and Witzel will be fighting for time there. Like, the competition for places is pretty intense, and hopefully it creates a healthier, I guess, environment, atmosphere, and then leads to a better season.
Yeah, and then the flip side of that is the worry that there's so many options that it gets changed every week when something doesn't work out, you know?
Like last year, yeah.
Exactly. I don't understand the Witzel signing, personally.
Really? Interesting.
I mean, I think he's a good player. Like, he's been good for Dortmund, obviously, but, like, I don't know. I think he's a bit of a luxury player. Like, he has very nice moments, but I think over the course of the season, I don't think that he's, like, a super crucial piece, to be honest with you.
Interesting. Yeah, there's been a lot of praise for him on social media throughout the preseason, and I wasn't initially very excited by this signing, because Atletico were linked with Boubacar Kamara, who ended up going to Aston Villa, God knows why, a couple other guys, and then they just, like, on a Saturday morning out of nowhere, they said, reports from Belgium were like, they're going to sign Axel Witzel. Like, holy cow. He's 33. He's had an Achilles injury a year and a half ago that sapped his mobility significantly. And Atletico are going to sign him to a one-year deal. Not exciting, not sexy, but maybe he can get the job done.
I mean, it's a free transfer, so it's a punt.
Yeah, like, there's really not much risk involved. And Kondogbia is still here. So if it really doesn't work out and Witzel can't keep up with the pace of play, especially in the bigger games, the higher tier competitions like the Champions League, then yeah, we can say we may have seen this coming. But I really do wonder if the solution for Atleti's center back problem is just that Simeone is going to stick Witzel back there, because he doesn't have as much mobility, but his vision and reading of the game are still really good. He was well over 90% passing accuracy at Borussia Dortmund last year, well over 90, even 100%. At least once this preseason. I think he completed every one of his passes. I'd have to double check that. But we're talking like Rodri level accuracy, like 95% or better, which we haven't had a midfielder or a deep lying anchor, a deep lying five with that kind of vision and that kind of ability to break up play since Thiago, maybe. If it all works out, at its best, we're getting a new Thiago.
Yeah, I think we just have to wait and see.
Yeah.
Because the role could differ, you know, what he looks like physically could swing a lot, but it's just a weird team. It's a weird group of players that you could talk yourself into or out of.
And that's kind of what I've been doing. I've been vacillating on it for weeks, but we just have to see how it looks when the actual games begin. A question I got for you from our WhatsApp group, the Colchonero chat group chat on WhatsApp. You can sign up on patreon.com by joining the $10 tier. Well, you got any realistic expectations for Marcos Llorente this year now that Nahuel Molina is in tow? I think a repeat of his 2021 season might be a little far-fetched, but he's certainly better than the player we saw last year, right?
I think so. I hope so. I mean, yeah, 2021 was so ridiculous. You know, he was just such a physical beast, mm-hmm. and that was capable of changing games on a moment's notice. And last year, just never got going. Just never once got going. And I don't know. I don't know what happened. It's not like he just fell off a cliff. I do think that last year... Well, all right, I'll say this. I think 2021 was an outlier, and I think last year was an outlier too. So I think it'll likely end up somewhere back in the middle. I think it'll probably be a lot like his... Maybe like a slightly higher level than his first season, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think there's a happy medium for Llorente. Like, I saw some reaction saying, oh, the sooner Simeone realizes he's their worst midfielder, the better everyone will be like, what? Let's calm down. That was, like, some of the reaction I saw. Like, folks, let's chill out here. Let's see how the games actually go.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the guy who had 25 goal contributions and helped us win the league 2 years ago, you know, that guy might not be it probably isn't the truest indicator of how good a player Llorente is. Kieran Trippier was absolutely sensational that year. And I think there was a rush to give Llorente more credit than compared to Trippier, who was just bar none the best right back in La Liga that season. With Molina, though, I think the right side of our attack could be really explosive. Molina is a lot of fun. Chola wanted him so badly, man. He dropped him into the team immediately. Like, 2 days after they signed him, he's in the team.
He loves it, man.
After they announced him, he's in the team. Molina, he was playing as a wing back at Udinese. He's really fast, pacey, explosive. Could be a really exciting tandem with Llorente. I just wonder how he's going to hold up defensively, especially because he hasn't really played at the highest level. No disrespect whatsoever to Udinese, but that's a mid-table Serie A side.
Yeah, you kind of wonder if it'll be similar to a Lodi situation. Like, you love what he does going forward, but then in a Simeone team, maybe he gets a little bit more exposed. But I think, again, it's just one of those things we have to wait and see. I think having a natural right back would be helpful. I think Llorente was doing a job there. I don't know. I still don't really know what Marcos Llorente is. Like, he's a really interesting player and can do a lot of good things for you, but I don't super know what he is.
Something. Yeah, who really is Marcos Llorente? Last year he was a wing back, unfortunately. He was a right back. This year I hope not to see that. And that's gonna be one of the top storylines this year. I think in addition to, is Jan Oblak gonna recover his form? Is João Félix gonna explode? Spoiler, yes. I think the number three question is, will the real Marcos Llorente please stand up?
Yeah.
Right? I don't think he's someone who's going to score double-digit goals again, but I think there's half a dozen goals in there in the league.
Yeah,
there's definitely probably 6 goals, 3-4 assists. I think he's someone who can, basically operating as a pure winger, playing ahead of Molina, that's probably someone who can get you double-digit goals if he's healthy. And remember, he missed a lot of time last year through injury. He missed, yeah, I think, the equivalent of 2 or 3 months with injury last year.
He just causes chaos.
He does. In a good way. Last year was not in a good way because he was so disconnected from the play because we didn't sign a right back.
Yeah, totally. And I don't think he will ever be any kind of, like, actual central midfielder. I think he should be a guy that you use as a weapon going forward, whether that's off the bench or... you know, starting on the wing, that kind of thing. You just want him in the box and doing stuff.
Yes.
Because he can make it happen.
I think he should, if we play in a 3-4-3 or a 4-3-3 type formation, he should be a forward. He should play on the right side of that forward three.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, because he's not the most defensively responsible. other than like that 1 year at Alaves when he was there on loan, he was an absolute monster. That's never been Llorente's rep. Not really, anyway. And it does leave us a bit open in midfield. You don't want 33-year-old Witzel getting overwhelmed, and you don't want Kondogbia, or God forbid, not Koke, again, getting overwhelmed in the center of the park. So it's an interesting... it'll be interesting to see just how Simeone weaponizes Llorente, how he sorts through all these options in midfield. I also wanted to ask you, because Simeone tried this multiple times in the preseason, and it seems like this is where he feels Griezmann should be deployed now. Do you think he could make a good interior playmaker, a good interior midfielder?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I can't say that I didn't watch the preseason games that closely, so I didn't see what he looked like
Make like a vision board, Rob.
A vision board.
Mentally project it.
I mean, I guess in some ways, but I don't think... I mean, physically, we know that Antoine Griezmann is largely spent. Because he had a lot of hard years in there, mostly at the hands of Diego Simeone. I mean, he's always been a decent playmaker, but I think the thing with Griezmann is you just liked what he brought from a physical standpoint so much. You kind of struggle to picture him as a more like... You're not going to see him become like Cesc Fabregas or something here, you know? Like,
well, that depends which Fabregas you're speaking of. Which
current one playing in like Serie B or whatever.
And which, you know, all due respect to him, man, just spend the last years of your career on vacation, basically.
Hey, Lake Como, man, why not?
Yeah, that's hella nice. Ugh.
Can't blame him. You get to be part owner of the club, sure.
Did they really give him an ownership stake?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Good for him, though.
That's a deal. You go from Monaco, you go from Monaco to Lake Como. That'll work.
Yeah,
that'll do.
Played for two teams in London. Got to play in Monaco, Lake Como. Yeah,
was in Barcelona.
And in Barcelona,
I mean, he's never really lived in a bad place.
Cesc has had a pretty scenic career, honestly.
Oh yeah, it's been good.
If you really think about it, that's some pretty nice views he's had. Wow.
Absolutely. I think Thierry Henry also became part owner of the club, so I don't know what's going on there.
I did see that part, yeah.
I don't know if this is like some Arsenal fan owning the club or something, but it just seems kind of weird.
I think, the Fabregas comp you made is an interesting one. I think we agree that Griezmann just doesn't have the mobility anymore, and maybe not even the finishing ability anymore, to be reliable as a forward.
No.
Last year, no, I don't want to say conclusively demonstrated it, because he did miss time with injury after Danny Carvajal knocked him out of the derby. But, yeah, I don't see him as a viable option at forward anymore, especially when the four guys, at least three of the four guys who are still in the squad, are, I would argue, are better than him currently. I think as an interior midfielder, playing as one of the two eights with DePaul on the other side, or Koke on the other side even, that could be pretty nice, because Griezmann, for all his faults last season, still a pretty good playmaker, still sees the game extremely well, is a very good passer. And in the Champions League games, like the second leg against Man United, that was a heroic performance defensively. He was pulling fullback duty the entirety of the second half at Old Trafford.
He won't put in a shift.
And that's why Cholo loves him.
Absolutely. That's all you have to do. Really.
And I think you and I agree that's not worth paying Barca $40 million next year, but that's the way it goes. That's the decision the club made, and we'll see how it works. But I like the idea, honestly, of putting Griezmann in midfield. That kind of removes the five-forward problem that we had last year. It just creates another one in midfield, but I like the competition. We mentioned Lamar earlier, and that contract extension... I'm not sure I'd call it a stroke of genius, but it was a pleasant surprise. And he's going to get his money. He's just spreading it out. Instead of a 2-year extension, it's a 4-year extension. But he's one of those guys like Lodi too, that I would have been okay if he had left for a good fee, but I'm also kind of glad he's staying. I think Limaz is a really good player, even though he's weird, and that I think he can be replaceable as well.
Totally. I mean, I think we've seen him at his best now, which for a long time was like, what the hell is this guy that we signed for all this money? Like, what are we doing here? But then, you know, 2 years ago, it was like, oh, well, this is the real Toma Lemon. And he was amazing. But I don't know. I like him as a player. I think it would be interesting to see where he fits in again, because we've seen what makes him successful. And I'm glad that – I think it was important that he stuck around, because I think he's useful, and I think he understands what Simeone's trying to do now.
Mm-hmm.
And has kind of found his spot in the team.
And it's a pretty incredible turnaround from where he was his first 2 years and where he is now. When he's healthy, I think he's genuinely our best playmaker. He was lost his first 2 years. I mean, his first year was up and down. His second year, he was just...
A disaster.
Didn't look like he belonged in this team at this level at all. And Simeone publicly aired frustrations with him, and there were reports that Lema wanted to leave, that the club put him in the shop window. But no, he stayed. He gutted it out. Simeone gave him another chance, and he ran with it. And now look at him. I'm really happy for him. You know, and he's a guy that a lot of fans, including me, regrettably, dumped on a little bit. But he stayed, and he made the most of that situation, and I'm happy for him.
Oh, totally. Yeah, no, you can't help but love the story with him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's been great.
Some smartass on the Into the Calderon account tweeted me, like when I said something about how Lema's renewal helped us register Molina and Witzel, and this guy tweeted # the Barca way when it's not even remotely the same situation.
Yeah, we're not publicly incensing violence against Toma Lemar's like they are with Frankie Dion.
Oh my God, that poor guy. I actually feel bad for a Barca player. Oh my
I
God.
Do too, man.
And they're doing the same to Braithwaite too.
Yeah, I mean, like, What are we doing here? You're shaming them and getting your fans to spit abuse at them because they aren't taking less money?
They just want the money that's owed to them.
Yeah.
Through their contract. The terms stipulated in their contracts. They just want to be... Like, I'm not going to turn down 17 million euro a year and a life in Barcelona. Why should Frankie de Jong? Why should Martin Braithwaite? Why should Samuel Umtiti?
Absolutely.
Why should any of these guys leave? Like, no, it's not the current board's fault. It's the old board's fault, but it's your mess. You need to deal with it in a responsible and ethical way. And that is my biggest problem with what Barcelona have done this summer. Like, is it going to be good for the league in the sense that it brings in revenue and eyeballs and an audience? Sure. But I think it's reprehensible what Barca have done this summer. Absolutely atrocious.
Yeah, no, it's horrible.
I think it's just galling what they have done and how they have done it. And the type of abuse that the current board has actually engendered, the venom that is being spewed toward De Jong and Braithwaite and all the other players who won't play nice and cut their salaries or leave. They don't have to cut their salaries and leave. They can stay and collect their salaries. They should.
Well, and it's been such an obviously orchestrated media campaign as well.
Yeah, the Barcelona
media. The story's coming out not only just about these players and their, you know, refusal or illegal contracts or whatever kind of shit Barcelona want to say, but then these, like, New York Times ran a profile of Laporta.
Of Laporta, yeah, washing his
image.
Like,
but we'll spend our way out of this. It's like, what are we doing?
That spending our way out of it, that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is it's 3 years from now, Barca will be in the same position they were in during the pandemic.
Right.
Which,
if not worse.
You know, which we're still in, by the way. I think people forget we're still in a pandemic. Like, anytime I go to eat out, like I went to Chipotle the other day, and I'm the only person in the entire Chipotle wearing my mask.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
I mean, come on. I know we have some crazy people in Arizona, but come on, man.
Yeah, it's I think it's just gotten to a point where people don't care.
I know.
It's just, you're not going to be able to win that fight anymore.
I know. And, like, I'm going on a couple of trips later this year, so I'm going to be on an airplane and in an airport where other people aren't wearing their masks, and I understand the flights are long, people get upset. So, you know, I'm with you. I think we're all tired of this, but
anyway, of course.
I'll save the COVID rant for another time.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Barcelona, it's like, we understand that you are a very high-profile and historic club and all this, and it's not the current board's fault, but still, you have to bear this burden. And signing a bunch of really expensive players and selling off all your media assets and twerking in the streets of Barcelona, like, is this really the way you want to handle this situation? Like, you famously and love to tell everybody how good your academy is. Why don't you just save some money and just use your academy players?
Their academy is so bad now, they're saying Ronald Araujo is made in La Masia.
Exactly.
When they bought him
from... They're selling dudes to LA Galaxy, like, right. Oh, this dude, straight from the academy.
You saw they let Ricky Puig go, right? And, like, in his intro video with LA Galaxy, he's like, what's up, cheese?
Yeah. What was that?
I don't know.
What was that?
I don't know. I was very puzzled when I saw that.
It's also weird that a 22-year-old that came through Barcelona's academy went to the Los Angeles Galaxy.
Like, yeah, man, right on. It's good for MLS, right? We're getting some young talent in America.
I guess. I guess. Who do you think, just without looking,
who
do you think is the, like, best player for LA Galaxy? Do you have any idea?
That would require me knowing anyone on the LA Galaxy roster, which I don't. Is Chicharito there?
Yeah, it's still Chicharito.
There's one.
But that feels really sad. In the year 2022, it's Chicharito.
And I only know this because I saw an Instagram reel yesterday where a reporter asked him about the situation at Man United, which is hilarious.
Yeah, he played there once.
Yeah, and he just said some very actually thoughtful comments about how Sir Alex Ferguson is long gone and they need to stop living in the past.
Oh, actually, you know what? Excuse me. I misspoke. The best player for the Galaxy is Douglas Costa.
That's where Douglas Costa is?
Douglas Costa.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, wow. Remember him? He played for the big clubs.
Oh, my gosh. He must have signed there a couple of years ago, right?
Looks like he joined in February of this year.
It feels like a couple of years ago. This has been a long year.
It has been a long year in your defense.
It's been a long, couple of years. Time has been kind of blurred during the pandemic.
Yeah, Douglas Costa. How about that?
Wow. Yeah.
Good luck, Ricky Puig.
I am not an MLS expert. I think I'm showing
MLS
that right
sucks,
now.
Dude.
MLS sucks. Well, you're an Atlanta United aficionado, Rob.
Oh, yeah, I love them. They're great. Well, but... I probably should... Well, let's just say, like, I know a guy who's an Atlanta United fan who claims that the two clubs that he supports are Manchester United and Atlanta United. And the reason he's a Man United fan is because of Michael Owen. Which, like... Not only is that, like, an extremely specific window of time that you had to start watching soccer, you chose to, like, extraordinarily watched Michael Owen when he was at Manchester United?
I mean, we all have our own fandom stories. I try not to cast too much judgment, but that is very strange.
So it's not even, like, I'm not even mad at it. It's just random.
He played there for 3 years, 31 games.
Yeah, that's not... He won the Ballon d'Or at Liverpool. Like,
yeah.
I was just so confused when I told him. I was like, are you being serious right now?
Yeah.
Really? That was the guy. The teams that won the Champions League for Manchester United, you're like, no, Michael Owen. Not Carlos Tevez.
Michael Owen.
Give me Michael Owen.
Yeah, you're right. That's a very specific snapshot in history.
Give me a Paco. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. All right. Well, let's wrap
Iguodala, excuse me.
Let's wrap with some You got any?
What the fuck do I know?
You got any La Liga predictions, Rob?
I don't know. Someone will be terrible. Let's see. Do I have any La Liga predictions?
Like, where do you think Atleti finish? Let's start there.
I mean, third probably.
Third.
I think there is the potential for second if Barcelona fail to register a bunch of players, which is certainly on the table.
Or if this, or if it doesn't mesh, or if there's some weird thing that happens at Madrid, who knows?
Yeah,
it's been known to happen at Madrid before, but I think they're very strong. I think we could be a very good third place team, but we'll be a third place team.
I think more than likely we will be. I don't think Sevilla will finish in the top four. I don't think it'll be especially close for them either.
I have them finishing seventh, and someone just unloaded on me the other day for saying that.
Well, oh, I saw that.
They lost their two starting center backs, and they didn't. Their solution was to sign Isco, who hasn't been, no disrespect, but he hasn't been good in years. Isco has been kind of an afterthought for multiple seasons.
He hasn't been good since he was at Malaga. Like, his biggest contributions for Real Madrid were coming off the bench in Champions League finals. Now that's it. Literally.
Yeah, well, I laugh at that, but he was, like, one of the decisive reasons why they beat us in 2014.
He was sick.
Yeah.
But that was it. That was all he did.
Yeah, Ancelotti brought Di Maria and Isco off the bench that game, and it was tough. We couldn't stop them.
No, he was amazing at Malaga, but he got ruined at Real Madrid. I don't think Sevilla are much. I don't think they're too much to worry about. I think we're kind of seeing. It's a weird mix of teams, man. Like, if you asked me to pick, like, 7 through 15 in La Liga, I don't think I could do it with any level of confidence.
Yeah, I gave it my best shot earlier today, but I think on one hand it's pretty interesting, and it's good for just overall parity. I think a lot of viewers won't be too interested because they have Premier League to distract them.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's some good teams mid-table. I like what Getafe did this summer. They reinforced pretty well. Athletic brought Valverde back. Osasuna should be pretty reliably mid-table. Curious to see how Manu Sanchez gets on there, his third year there. Samuel Lino at Valencia will be nice to watch, especially with Guedes gone. And Roro Riquelme at Girona, big move for him. If he does well there this year, I think we see him in Atleti's first team next season.
Yeah, definitely. That's a big chance for him.
And Cameo at Rayo.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to see these guys because we've kind of been following them as they've gone through their loans in the lower divisions, and it's fun to see them when they get to actually play with the big boys.
Yeah, absolutely. I think these are all really good loans. We get to see them up close and personal in La Liga in the top flight, so it's good. Definitely ideal loan moves.
I think Celta will get relegated. There's my shout for you.
Yeah, Brendy Boyle on Twitter also said that yesterday. I was a bit surprised, but the vibes there are bad.
They're bad.
No, like just a total war between Denis Suarez and the president and the coach are fighting over transfer targets, and basically it's can Iago Aspas at 35 years old pull us out of the fire again?
Yeah.
Which maybe he can. Aspas is a stud. But, yeah.
By the way, you failed to say Denis Suarez's full name, which is Arsenal legend.
You're
Denis
right.
Suarez.
Arsenal legend Denis Suarez.
Arsenal legend.
I he might prefer to be at Arsenal right about now.
I'll never forget those 6 games. Never, as long as I live. No, they're bad. I think they're going to be real bad.
I had them, I think, 15th, which I think Kudet's probably
down there for sure.
He's probably going to be the first coach fired. Like, Kudet's probably going to get the sack, and then someone, they'll bring in someone to help them stave off relegation, but they're going to be down there. Yeah, I had Sevilla 7th. Between Betis, Villarreal, and La Real, I don't see a whole lot of difference there. I think Gerard Moreno, if he's healthy this year, will probably be enough to get Villarreal 4th.
Sad as I am to agree with you, I think you're right.
Because you are a big Unai Emery fan.
Love him. Love him to death. Love that guy. I would like to see Real Sociedad do better this year, because I like their team. Maybe this is the, like, Isak does really well year and like gets his big move
to Arsenal,
finally
to Arsenal
that we've been waiting for 100 million years. Yeah, you know, but like I like their team. I've always liked their team, but it, I don't know. We'll see.
Any further Atleti predictions? We talked about third in La Liga, Copa del Rey, Champions League.
Champions League, probably not. But I think Copa del Rey would be interesting because it's been kind of rough.
Man, we haven't competed in the Copa del Rey in years. It's been
years.
Real tough.
Like, rough exits, too. No, I think, you know, it's the Copa del Rey. It is what it is. But I think it would be nice to actually try in that competition. I'd be interested to see what the group is. For the Champions League.
Yeah,
it feels like we always get hammered.
I'm extremely interested in the group because I'm going to be in Spain for match day 5 of the group stage, so I would really like to know who we're playing that week.
Hopefully it's not Karabakh.
So, oh no, that's a curse word. We have to bleep that out.
It could be.
I have to go into Audacity now and bleep that out. Goddamn, dude.
Did they win the league last year? Yeah, of course they did.
And they just made it through their Champions League playoff round.
Good for them. Classic.
Yeah. Classic
character. Those classic guys, we love them.
I give them credit for helping us win the Europa League.
They did do that.
Because without those two games that year, we don't drop into the Europa League.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
So in a weird way, we like Karabash.
Yeah, I guess. Man, I don't think I can pronounce any player's name in their team. It's rough.
And it's mostly Eastern European and like specifically
mostly Azerbaijani.
Azerbaijani or Armenian. Not Armenian. They don't get along.
Yeah, I don't think that would go.
Oh, that's geopolitics corner.
They do have a Georgian, though. Shout out.
Yeah, they get along with Georgia, don't they?
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. I'm not going to venture into geopolitical
territory. Not my Georgian.
No, that's right. Not your dogs.
The other ones.
Not your dogs.
Not the dogs. Not them. Not them. I don't think we want their footballers. I don't think they can play middle linebacker. Just to guess.
Defensive lineman in the SEC.
Yeah, that might be tough.
I actually mentioned this to Rob before we went on the air, but I want to mention it again because it's so damn funny. The LSU Tigers football team is charging fans almost $14,000 to tailgate this season, which is...
Well, and it says something about how sick my SEC brain is. I was like, I mean, it sounds like you get a lot for your money there.
Yeah, because they have the ice chests and the TV.
You get two coolers?
And the table set up and the bellhop service. And you, Rob, Southern man you are... Like, yeah, that's a pretty good deal, if I do say so myself.
Do you get a free koozie? If so, I'm in.
Can you do, like, a Matthew McConaughey True Detective type accent there?
No, that's a different region to my level of Southern.
It's too swampy.
It's too Texas-y. I've never actually been able to do a Texas accent because it's just like a different intonation of Southern. It's more country than I am.
Mine tends to veer into Australian when I try it.
I mean, they're not dissimilar places. People that live there are insane. You know, like, they drink an exceptional amount. And they, I don't know, less poisonous snakes, I guess.
Yeah, yes.
By some amount.
The flora and the fauna of Australia, just very, very scary stuff.
I ain't going to that place.
No.
No, sir. I'm not. You go into a bush to take a pee and you'll get every 1700s disease.
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean?
Oh, my God. Yeah, hell no.
No. Absolutely not.
Well, before we sign off, we do have to do the now standard, I guess, Arsenal check-in.
Oh, great.
Through one game, a success away at Crystal Palace with new captain Martin Odegaard.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
How are you feeling about the Gunners?
You know, kind of in a pleasing parallel, I kind of feel similarly. as I do about Atleti, in that I can talk myself into or out of the team at any given moment. Like, I like the players. I think the players they signed make sense and are proven in the Premier League and are good. But then also I'm like, do I really want to watch a whole season of Thomas Partey, given what information has come out about him?
The very serious and very bad information.
Seems real bad.
Yeah.
Seems real bad.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate because he is a guy that for many years, both you and I have had a lot of emotion invested into, good and bad. But now it's all bad.
Yeah.
Now it's all real bad. Yeah, so that's unfortunate. So wish that wasn't a thing.
Yeah, I think a lot of people wish that wasn't the thing and that he shouldn't be eligible for selection even.
Yeah, that's
the worst part, is that he remains eligible for selection regardless of the PR black eye Arsenal are gonna get from this. He remains eligible for selection and Arteta's gonna keep picking him.
Oh, he's gonna play.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's no, I mean, he was found not guilty as far as we know, basically on a technicality, not based on the absence of guilt.
Right.
Which, you know, I'm not sure how union laws or whatever work with contracts over there, but I know certainly in American sports that's a problem.
Right.
Like, if a baseball player is found not guilty of DV, then there you can't really suspend him or release him, because then you'll get in a whole bunch of contractual hell because there wasn't, like, an actual conviction, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's a tough spot to be in. I just wish he wasn't on the team, really, at the end of the day.
It's pretty gross.
Really gross.
It's just really gross.
Really gross.
You know?
So, yeah, not happy about that. Yeah, no. But otherwise, it's fine. I guess we'll see what happens on Saturday. But I feel okay. I feel like we'll probably finish either fourth or fifth. Same as it ever was.
Same as it ever was. Yeah.
Never really changes.
Finishing outside of the Champions League places would be karmic for the Thomas Partey situation, probably.
A fair point.
Right?
A fair point.
It wouldn't not be karmic for Arteta to continue selecting him and they finish outside of the Champions League.
I agree.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you. I mean, that signing has just been a disaster, you know, even prior to this stuff, so.
And, you know, the amazing thing is Diego Simeone has not said thing one about Thomas since he left. And that was 2 years ago. He hasn't mentioned him in any interviews, any press conferences that I've followed along with. Nothing. Not a word.
Yeah. It seemed like that ended on a bad note.
He left. He went out the back door. You know, not to make an unfortunate pun there, but he left in an incorrect way.
He did, and it was a weird transfer at the time that we didn't really see coming. I guess we probably should have, but yeah, it was just wasn't great, was it?
A word for Lucas Torreira before we leave, Rob, as he played for for both your teams. Now he's at Galatasaray, which is a bit of a weird move for him.
Weird move. I feel like I'm crazy because I always really liked him.
Me too, man.
I don't know. He's just a useful guy to have.
Short, stocky, combative South American midfielder. What's not to like?
Yeah, that's a useful player.
Yeah.
Like, he's not gonna be a star or knock your socks off, like, playing. He's not Rodri. Like, he's not going to complete 99% of his passes. That's just not going to happen, right? But he's a useful player. Galatasaray feels like a sad move for him.
Yeah. Like, you can understand Dries Mertens going there.
Sure,
but
totally.
But Torreira is still in his mid-20s. He's 26.
Well, it seemed like it was a situation where all the Italian teams are hilariously broke due to the pandemic, mostly.
Right. Even you.
And also general Italianness. You know?
That's,
you know,
anti-Italian, I mean, discrimination. he says in the Silvio Dante voice.
Yeah, that's right. But they're, you know, Fiorentina couldn't afford him. No one else really could. So he had to go to Galatasaray for like £5 million, which is just kind of sad.
Yeah, he's a better player than that. You know, and I wish it would have worked out for him at Atletico, because I loved that signing, especially on loan. I loved it.
Started out great.
It did. His first game against Celta, when we were still playing the 4-4-2, he was dynamite. He was everywhere that afternoon.
Yeah, amazing.
He scored that golazo against Osasuna on Halloween when Suarez was still out with COVID. And he just never really found his way there. And his mom died, and it was just really sad.
It was just rough. That whole year was rough.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I wish him all the best. Good player. I doubt he'll be a Galatasaray for long. I feel like he'll be there for maybe a season or two, and then some team will get their money up and sign him back.
He did say that he wanted to go to Boca Juniors.
He did say that, but that I think that was also kind of part of the family stuff that he had going on.
Yeah.
I think he just wanted to get back closer to home, which, you know, fair enough. It's a long way away, but...
Maybe it still happens.
It could.
Yeah.
But that sort of seems like a later in the career thing, you know?
Yeah, probably.
You know, I mean, he's not going to, you know, he's not going to go back to Uruguay like Luis Suarez.
What did you think of that move, by the way? Speaking of Suarez,
I think it's cool. I like it. I think it makes sense for where he's at, because he's basically done, but I think probably in Uruguay he'll be a beast and they'll love him. It's a good way to go out. I mean, he could play there for probably, what, 3 more years?
He could probably go there for 2 or 3 years. It was really weird that a move in Europe didn't materialize for him.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of weird.
I wonder how much, what desire he had to go to some, like, mid to lower table side, you know?
Yeah. That's a consideration. That's information we're not privy to.
Right. Like, I guess maybe, like, Ajax would have been cool. Something like that. But, I don't know. Maybe he was just like, you know what, I'm at this certain age. Let's just go home.
Mm-hmm. And then it's a good time to do it. He's out of contract at Atletico.
Yeah.
You know, everyone kind of saw last year that he had lost multiple steps and that he wasn't, like, he pretty much exhausted everything he had left helping us win the title, which, thank you for that.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Appreciate it.
So, you know, you're watching El Pistolero and you know he's not what he once was. I just thought it was a little weird, but, you know, just what a story, right? Just totally romantic. Oh, yeah. Going back to Nacional after 16 years and then scoring in his second game. Really cool.
Yeah, really cool. You can't not love it. I mean, you can say he probably could have gone to a higher standard of a club, but I think at this point in his life, I get it. Why not?
Yeah. Well, on that note, probably a pretty good place to stop. Rob Walker, thank you so much, as ever, for joining me on this special season preview edition of Colchonero Chat.
My pleasure. Always glad to hop on.
And again, the fun starts for real on Monday night. Atletico play Getafe in a mini derby, match day one of La Liga Santander. We're going to be doing podcasts after just about every game this season. As the games in September and October, it's going to be hectic as we have the midseason World Cup. Games are going to be coming thick and fast, so we will do our best to keep up and deliver the goods. Follow us on Twitter and on our site, intothecalderon.com. Also, from as little as $3 a month, you too can become a Colchonero Chat amigo, patreon.com/Colchonero Chat. You can listen to all new and archived episodes of this program and the Partido a Partido podcast wherever you get your podcasts. But subscribe on Spotify to the Atletico Madrid Podcast Network. We'll chat with you again next week. Adios.